Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Boleyn, your host, and it is time to do it your way.
Elle, let's dive right in to your journey as you transitioned out of corporate America. So what were you doing, and then what allowed you to transition out and to going on your own as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I originally studied business in college. I started my career in corporate finance. I was a financial advisor for a Swiss bank, which is totally opposite from what I do now. But one of the things that I think a lot of people don't know about being a financial advisor is that your job is essentially marketing and sales. You get paid one of two ways, typically. One is bringing in new business, so finding new people whose money you're going to manage, and then selling them investment products, so things that they're actually going to put their money in and invest. So while you would think that being a financial advisor means you're spending a lot of time giving financial advice, it's kind of not the case in terms of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I loved the idea of marketing and sales. I just wasn't really passionate about finance. So at the time, the market had crashed, things were really stressful in my job, and I kind of just wanted a creative outlet. So I started a blog, like a lot of people did. I had no desire to turn it into a full-time business. It was more just, I need something fun to do, a way to share things I like on the internet. And I had absolutely no strategy behind it when I first started. But I realized there was this whole world of online business that was completely different from what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. And there were bloggers who were working with brands and doing fun shoots and partnerships. And I was like, wow, this sounds a lot more fun, honestly, than what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to put more effort in my blog. I ended up having the opportunity to actually move to New York because I was approached by one of the brands I had worked with, through my blog, because they were starting their own blog. And they had followed me for a while. They thought that I would be a good person to come in, help them with their blog strategy and digital marketing strategy. And at the time, I was like, wow, this is completely not what my corporate experience is in exactly, but I had kind of had this hobby. And so I took the opportunity to move to New York. I worked for the startup for about a year, year and a half or so before I started my own business. And originally it was just, I thought that I didn't want to work for other people. I was sort of tired of kind of the day-to-day grind. Working at a startup in New York was a whole other type of stress that I wasn't used to coming from a really strict corporate environment, whereas before there was lots of rules and regulations and structure around my day that kind of became, okay, now there's not really any rules or structure and you're doing everything all the time. And I knew there was some other way that I could use my experience and build a business that I actually enjoyed where I could help people on my own terms.
I love that. So you were working in corporate finance as an advisor. Then you transitioned. You started your blog with no clear intention or vision to make it what it is when how it's come out today. And you had an opportunity. So I call it a bridge job anytime it takes us from, maybe it takes us out of the corporate environment of what we're fully doing, and it actually gives us some time to maybe let some things breathe. And then from there, after working the 1.5 years startup, is when you took your business full time. I would love, like, if you could speak to the time when you were doing the blog in parallel with working in corporate still, and what did that look like? Did you have any sort of systems in place that allowed you to stay focused so you could stay on top of your blog, or was the blog more of a side thing? And if it, you got to it, you got to it, but just take us a little bit more behind the scenes of how you were able to manage both sort of passions and desires, and or manage both of them in parallel at the same time.
So it really was just for fun. And I honestly wasn't very strategic about the blog for the past or for the first couple years. And I did realize probably 2 years or so into the blog, which doesn't exist anymore, by the way, that I needed to be more strategic about it if I really wanted it to grow. And so I had at the time, I think it was like 2 or 3 posts a week that I was committing to. And I was doing everything at night. So when I'd get home from my job, it was like my second job, or that's sort of what I ended up treating it like once I realized that, okay, if I really want to put more effort into this, I need to know that, you know, there's going to be dedicated time that I'm working on it. I'm going to eat dinner and then spend a couple hours on it at least a few nights a week. I don't think that it really took off though until I actually made that change and moved to New York, partially because my job was a little bit more flexible. I was able to incorporate more of the things that I was doing on a daily basis into my blog, because when I worked in finance, I was honestly completely anonymous for the first couple years that I had a blog, which is sort of weird. It was just, you know, this kind of faceless person who is sharing things, which now that I'm looking back at it, I'm like, of course it didn't, you know, really take off until I started showing my face and telling people more about who I really was. But I think that partially the reason I was anonymous was because of my day job. I just needed to be anonymous on the internet and not really have, you know, I didn't want people who were, you know, Googling financial advisors in Washington, D.C. to then find my like blog about what lipstick I liked. But once I transitioned to working in New York, it didn't matter. And I sort of kind of came out as who I am and what I'm, you know, doing on a day-to-day basis. And I think that was really what, for me, the point where people started connecting with me as an actual person. And things sort of took off from there.
So then how did, when you were working at the startup, and then moving into what it is you're doing now and some of the things that you're working on, how was that approach different? Like, if you can recall maybe one or two things, whether it was different from a strategic standpoint, or maybe you had a vision versus when you were doing the blog as a financial advisor, like what was different about it this time?
So when I started my business, it actually, what I really did is, so I had this blog, I had my day job, I was actually doing some freelance marketing work on the side, and I knew that I was going to make this decision to work for myself. Like, that was my goal. I wanted to quit my job and start my own business. So I actually stopped the lifestyle blog that I had going. I created a new blog that was marketing focused. I had maybe 5 or 6 different blog posts up before I even like launched my full website. So I just had blog posts that were related to Instagram and growing a following on social media. And then I sort of built out my services page. But I think that for me, it was a very strategic transition in saying like, okay, I'm going to start creating content that is going to be focused for the people that I am now trying to attract. And I had that in place before I even like launched the services.
Mm-hmm. How did you determine, did you go through any sort of process to determine exactly who you wanted to attract, or how you determined the content that you put out there and knowing that it was targeting the audience that you wanted to show up?
So to be completely honest, I would say that at first my content wasn't super specific. I knew that I had experience in marketing and I had experience in sales, and I wanted to help people with like online businesses, but that was sort of as specific as I got. And so I hadn't really thought about like who these people were specifically. I didn't really think about, you know, what their jobs would be or what they would want. You know, why are they even interested in growing an audience? Or sort of just like, I can teach you marketing and sales. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the first couple months, things were not great. I mean, I had a little bit of trouble trying to figure out like, okay, where are all the people, you know, I have like this offer, I have services, you can hire me. And I would get some referrals and there are people coming to my blog, but they were sort of all over the place. I had men and women and people with physical products and people with brick and mortar stores. And I was just like, okay, this, you know, I have sort of varied experience when it comes to sales and marketing. But I can't help all of these people, and I don't really want to. So it was probably 5 or 6 months after I actually started my business that I really sat down and thought, okay, who are the people that I really want to work with? You know, what do they do? What do they struggle with? Why do they need my help? And, you know, what am I doing to help them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. Like, definitely where it's almost like you get it out there, you see what sticks, you're throwing spaghetti against the wall. And then once you can start seeing what you're attracting really helps figure out not only which way you want to continue going, but then also what is it that really like feels good to you as well. What has been like talk to us about a time when you felt like a failure has set you up for later success.
So I would say that in, you know, kind of the beginning when I didn't really know who my audience is, and one of the things that I did kind of early on within the first, I think it was March after I started my business. So yeah, like 5 months into my business, I actually launched my first online course, and I could tell you a lot of reasons why that wasn't super successful. But the thing that I think made the most difference at a later time is, so my course was like general Instagram, like mm-hmm. how to grow your Instagram account. And the reason that I felt qualified to even launch or teach this course is, I haven't mentioned, but I have a dog.
Yeah.
And my dog happens to be kind of famous on Instagram.
Yeah. How did that happen?
So this was all sort of happening on the side of when I was working. And so so my dog's 3. Actually, she's just turned 4. I totally forgot.
She's super cute.
Literally just turned 4. But I started her account kind of around the same time. It was just a few months after we moved to New York. So this is all happening kind of at the same time. I started her account and I started my business when she had 15,000 Instagram followers. And in the first 2 months of my business, we grew her account from 15,000 to 30,000.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, okay, at the time I was obsessed with Instagram. I was spending a ton of time trying to figure out, you know, like what are the ways that we can grow your account and then monetize your account. And so a couple months after that, I decided I'm going to launch this course teaching other people how to grow their Instagram. And it was fairly generic. It was kind of it was aimed towards like females only because it was called Glam Your Gram. Mm. But it wasn't really speaking to a very specific audience, and it was fine. Like it launched, it was like, it wasn't like I didn't have any students. I was fine with it, but it wasn't like a 5-6 figure launch that like every, you yeah. know, I felt like all the people in online marketing was like, okay, you know, I followed all the steps. I actually like took a course on how to launch a course. I felt like I did everything right, but the course just wasn't like as profitable as I kind of hoped it would be. And so I took a look at, you know, who the audience was, why I didn't think this was as successful as I wanted it to be originally, because I was thinking, okay, like, how can I make it better? What can I do differently next time? And I realized that it just needed to be more specific. And so I actually launched a modified version of the course called Celebr Pet Bootcamp. And it was essentially Instagram for people who want to make their pets famous on the internet.
Oh my gosh.
Immediately I knew that it was going to be more successful. I mean, I did like a pre-launch webinar with hundreds of people who signed up. I made like thousands of dollars in the first 5 minutes. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is it.
There you go.
Like, I know what I'm doing now. And obviously it makes sense. I mean, now looking back at it, I'm like, oh, that's silly. Obviously, like, I, you know, created this account around my dog, and most of the people who follow her also have dogs. A lot of the people who follow her actually got dogs because of her, which is crazy to me.
Oh my gosh. And
we live in a weird world where people want to make their pets famous on the internet now. So having a course that was very specific and tailored to those people with pets made it so much more valuable, I think, to them than just a general, like, how to grow your Instagram, of course.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a, it's such a good lesson and reminder, because so often in the beginning, or, I mean, as we're growing a business, we want to talk to everyone, but I mean, you just gave us this perfect example of how niching down and looking at how we can speak to more of a specific audience. Do you still run Celebrate Pet Bootcamp?
I do not. I actually, at the end of 2016, closed down all my courses to focus on, like, styling and photography full time. So I love doing it. It was very profitable. But I honestly kind of got tired of Instagram changing every 5 seconds. And I felt like it wasn't something that I could just create as, like, an evergreen product and have it out there. I was, like, constantly updating it, and it just got to the point where it's like, I don't want to spend so much time working on the course.
Yeah.
I want to actually, you know, interact with my students and create other things. And so I made the decision to close down the courses at the end of 2016, but it was great while it lasted.
Yeah. Oh my God. And your dog is so cute. That is hilarious. I love it. What, so now you're doing, you have your freelance consulting services for custom product styling, photography, and then, like I said, the consulting for marketing strategy. You also have Styled Stock Society. So how did this, was it like in 2016 when it all came together, and what inspired the Styled Stock Society?
So it actually came from a need or desire to create recurring income. Like, that was my main goal. I wanted to create some sort of subscription or membership type income stream where I would have recurring income, because I was doing consulting. I had created some digital products. I was launching courses. None of my courses were evergreen. So, you know, I'd get, like, a big influx of money, and then I felt like I was constantly having to either create something new or figure out, you know, what's the next thing that I'm doing. And I was like, I just want to create one income stream that runs kind of on autopilot, where, you know, maybe I'm creating something on a regular basis, but it's not like a full blown course. And it's going to be recurring income. And so I honestly just went through all of my email opt-in forms, and I tried to figure out, you know, what is it that people are coming to me for? How are they finding me? What are they interested in? What is something that I could potentially create and charge people for on a regular basis? And I had a set of free stock photos on my website that 1,000 people had downloaded in 2 months. And so this was June 2016. And I realized that, you know, I enjoyed taking the photos. I wasn't a photographer at the time, but I knew how to use a camera. I had taken photos when I worked in marketing. I had taken photos for my own blog. I take all of Mochi's photos for her Instagram. So it wasn't that I had no idea how to take photos. I just didn't call myself a photographer at the time. And I thought, okay, well, this is something fun that I could do. What if I took a set of, like, 30 photos every month for people in my audience? Is that something that they would pay for? And I actually sent an email to those 1,000 people who had downloaded my free photos and pitched them the idea. And I had 72 people sign up in the first 48 hours.
Oh my gosh.
So that was sort of my cue that, like, okay, yeah, sure, people are going to pay for this. And from there, I actually, so I sent them an email with the idea and a pre-launch offer, which I honestly thought was too cheap. And so I thought that was the reason why people even signed up for it. They're like, oh yeah, this is, like, nothing. Like, sure, take my money. And so I was like, okay, what happens if I double the price? Like, will people still think this is a good idea. And I ended up having another 78 people sign up during my 3-week launch period. So I had about 150 members within wow. the first 3.5 weeks of launching the Styled Stock Society. And it's kind of grown from there. I mean, it started as a simple stock subscription that had just 30 photos a month, and you'd get those photos. And if you didn't join that month, you wouldn't get access to, you know, previous month's photos. And now it is a full-blown membership library with thousands of images and over 1,000 members. So it's changed quite a bit in the past couple of years intentionally, because I realized that it's part of my business that I wanted to put more focus on as it grew.
Yeah, that's incredible to have 1,000 people into a membership program. Would you say like what percentage of your time do you spend on Styled Stock Society? What percentage? Because I know flexibility in your schedule is something that's really important to you. So how do you typically spend your days, your weeks, your months?
So I am crazy about my time in a lot of ways. But I'm very protective over my time, because I feel like I need to, I mean, this is coming from a place of like, I did too many things, got really burnt out, was working all the time, and then realized that like things needed to change. And so I wanted to be able to create a schedule that allowed me to do all the things that I want to do, hopefully not do the things that I don't want to do, and also live my life, because I didn't start my own business so that I could work a million hours every week. And so I realized that most of the things that I'm doing on a regular basis, whether it's for my clients or the Styled Stock Society, which are kind of the two main areas of my business, other than Mochi, which is a whole separate thing. But most of the things that I can do for my business are, I break down into 3 pots, if you will, and each pot gets its own week. So I have 1 week where I work on, it's called my CEO week. And so I think any of the things that are planning and strategy and like my big team meetings, planning shoots for the month, figuring out what marketing things we're going to focus on, looking at a ton of different spreadsheets and reports to figure out what's working, what's not working, what do we need to tweak, what do we want to add, all that stuff. I spend a week doing that every month. And it's sort of my big picture, like, let's look at everything and plan for the future and review what we've done before.
So that week is more planning versus executing.
Correct.
Got it.
And then the next week, which it's not necessarily sequential, but usually I have a planning week and then my content week. So that's the week that I'm actually styling and shooting and editing and uploading all of the photos for my clients in Styled Stock Society and any other like content that we are creating. So it's my content week. And then the last week is a marketing week. We're actually implementing, you know, so during the planning week, we might decide, okay, this month we are working on our affiliate strategy, or this month we are working on, you know, Pinterest ads, whatever the thing is that we've identified as our marketing focus for the month. This is the month we're at, or the week that we actually execute it during our marketing week. And then I take a week off. And I'm very, very guarded with my free time, because left to my own devices, I would never take time off. So I have had to intentionally give myself time off in order to take it, which may sound crazy, but
I'm not at all.
Who has a really hard time shutting off. And it's one of the reasons why I realized that my sort of batch weeks worked best for me, because I could sort of dig in to whatever the thing that I was doing on and just focus, put my head down, work on something, start to finish. And so I never really feel like I have, you know, projects that are kind of half complete, or you know, things on my to-do list that like I know exactly when I'm doing them. Like if there's something that comes up, I'm like, okay, that's great. It's going on my marketing week. That means it's happening, you know, this week on my calendar, and I'm not going to think about it until then. And in the same way, I need that sort of white space for my own just like personal mindset and also like to get inspired and to feel like I'm not working all the time. I need to build that in for myself. So I have a week where I'm not allowed to do client work. I'm not allowed to create content. I'm not allowed to really do like marketing work. I usually travel.
I was just going to ask you that. How do you make sure that you don't work? Because I feel like that would actually be hard.
Yeah. So it kind of actually came from last August is sort of when I started this experiment. And I sort of have tweaked it along the way. But last August, I had the opportunity to travel to Puerto Rico in partnership with the Ritz-Carlton for Mochi. And the opportunity kind of came up a couple weeks before the trip. And I realized that, okay, I really want to go on this trip because it's a free trip to Puerto Rico. Who wouldn't want to go on that trip?
Yeah.
And this is before all of the tropical storms, thankfully. But we knew that we had a bunch of shoots scheduled and things happening. And I was like, okay, I can get all my work done. I just need to be really efficient. I need to be really productive. And I need to figure out, you know, how do I get the things done that I really need to get done, and then either outsource the rest or automate the rest, or figure out how to just not do as much stuff that I don't need to do or waste as much time in order to work fewer days. Mm. So I sort of had to cram 4 weeks of work into 3 weeks of work. And then I realized that I had trips planned in October, November, December and January. Yeah. So the next like 5 months, it happened to be that I also had trips planned. And so I thought, okay, how do I do this intentionally? How do I create a week where I'm not working? What do I need to do to structure my time? And so this sort of batch week system developed over the course of a few months, but it's been great to kind of have that time built in. So, you know, in December I could take time off to celebrate the holidays. This summer I'm actually taking a bit of a longer break just to, you know, get out of the city for a little while and enjoy the weather. So I didn't think that I'd be the type of person who were like, yeah, I'm going to take breaks all the time. Like a couple years ago, it was hard for me to take a summer Friday. And now I'm just like, it's not that I don't want to work. I kind of do want to work all the time, but I also want to enjoy my life.
Yeah. I mean, and I love that strategy too, because when you were saying that, it was a reminder that when we challenge ourselves to say, instead of 4 weeks, what can I get done in 3 weeks? It almost kind of crowds out the stuff that we either A, don't need to do, that doesn't need to be done, or B, it really makes it known of the things that, okay, I can't just do this on my own. What can I outsource? And that's when it starts to encourage us to pay someone else to do some of the things that maybe we don't want to do or don't have the time.
Exactly. And that's honestly something that I wish I had done sooner. I'm sort of a control freak, and letting go of things in my business was really hard for me. It took me to the point of basically being burned out to realize that, like, I can't do everything myself. There are a ton of people who I can hire to help me to do all these things. And it's funny because now I'm just like, can I outsource everything? Like, what?
Yeah.
Can't, like, I don't. I outsource like a lot of things in my business, but also my personal life. Like, I'm like, I don't need to do my laundry. I don't go grocery shopping. Like, how much of more of like my time can I get back by outsourcing things?
Totally. What were the first two things that you outsourced in your business?
Graphic design. One of the first people I hired was like a design assistant. And I just felt like for me, I have never really had like design training, and I kind of knew my way around Photoshop and Canva, and I was creating graphics for my business, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And I honestly spent a lot of time, I think, on things that I didn't need to be spending time on because someone could do it way faster. And so that was like the first thing. And then I hired a like virtual assistant who specialized in social media management to help with scheduling and posting and all the things when it comes to social media.
I love it. Where did you use any sort of service like Upwork or Fiverr? Or did you find it through personal connections?
I'm pretty sure that both of those people actually I found they were referrals, but they were referrals from people I knew in Facebook groups.
Oh, nice. Yeah, gotta love those Facebook groups. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you'd outsource?
So something that I'm not currently outsourcing.
Yeah.
So my next potential hire is in like affiliate manager, I think, is where I am at the moment. One of the things that we've been working on a lot with the Styled Stock Society this year is ramping up our affiliate program and sort of testing the waters to figure out, you know, does it make sense to invest more time and effort and honestly money in this part of the business? And I really feel like for this type of membership, having that personal referral has made a big difference in some of our conversions, because there's lots of stock photos on the internet. But I think when you get that personal recommendation from someone saying like, these are the photos that I use and I actually recommend them to people in their audience, that our conversion rates on those types of introductions, if you will, are much higher than say just running a Facebook ad. So
sure.
For me, that is something that I would love to put more effort in the latter half of this year. And it would be great to hire an affiliate manager to sort of really manage our affiliates. I want to have a better system in place for onboarding affiliates and training them and making sure that they're getting all the things that they need. I just don't want to be the person to do that.
Manage. Yeah. Well, I know you're currently working on something that is happening in July. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've realized kind of over the last 6 to 12 months or so is just this overwhelming push towards video. And I think that's kind of across a lot of different marketing channels, but I think everywhere people are saying, you know, you should have a YouTube channel, or you should be doing Instagram stories or Facebook Lives, and just video content in general is really just blowing up everywhere across the internet when it comes to marketing. And it totally makes sense. I think that there's a lot of things about video that help us have more of a personal connection. But again, with the things that I'm trying to do with stock photos is just make people's lives easier, give them high quality visual content that they can share with their audience where they don't have to worry about, you know, having something to post. And video is a hard thing to do sometimes. I mean, it's kind of easy to hold your phone up and selfie yourself talking. But if you want to say you're a health coach and you want to show how easy it is to make a smoothie in the morning so you can start your day fresh. Finding a video of someone making a smoothie is actually really hard, and it's honestly probably going to be expensive. So one of the things that we are doing is adding stock video to our stock library, which I'm really excited about.
That's amazing.
It's going to be just another way to, you know, anytime we have a collection that we're shooting, say we're doing, you know, healthy food in a kitchen, it's easy to, you know, take the photos and then also shoot some extra video content that we can create some small clips out of that people can use and share, because it's just such a cool way to kind of humanize and take that, you know, content one step further to really connect with people. So they're not just seeing a photo, they're actually seeing the smoothie happen in like the whole process.
Yeah, I never even thought about a stock video, but you're so right with video being the next big content, or maybe it already is and I'm behind it. But yeah, that's awesome. That's super exciting. Well, let's go right into rapid fire. I asked you what you'd outsource next, but what is a non-negotiable in your life?
Having like a really flexible schedule. I'm not a morning person. I don't want to do anything like before noon ever, to be honest. And I want the flexibility to like go on vacation or take my dog to the park and not have to sit at a desk all day.
Yeah. What is the one thing where you get your inspiration from?
Instagram.
Yeah. What do you believe others think is insane?
Oh, there's so many things. Okay, so here's actually, this is kind of random, but wearing lipstick for audio-only interviews.
Oh.
And sometimes it's perfume, but a lot of the times it's lipstick because I feel like even if no one can see me, sometimes I feel like if I put the effort in, I feel better. Like I feel more confident, I feel polished, I feel like I can do this, and it doesn't matter that no one can see me.
Absolutely. I love that. I should do that every once in a while. Oh gosh. And then is there like a certain quote that you live by?
Do more of what works and less of what doesn't.
Amen. And then best $100 or less purchase one can make in their business.
I mean, a membership to the Styled Stock Society,
Yeah.
that's shameless plug, but
There's definitely some of your styled stock bundles that I'm gonna hit up very soon later this afternoon that I'm gonna like take advantage of. So yeah, you do such an amazing job at your styled stock photography or the society and all the pictures in there. It's amazing. So Elle, will you share with my audience where they can find out more information about you, Styled Stock Society, and just connect with you if they have any follow-up questions? 'Cause they will.
yes, so you can find me online at eldruin.com. That's ELLEDROUIN.com. And I'm everywhere on social media at eldruin. And Styled Stock Society is styledstocksociety.com.
I love it. Yeah. I always get some, it was just like the other day when a podcast interview launched, one of the guests was like, "I've gotten so many emails from your listeners." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's 'cause they're pretty badass and they're engaged." So, heck yeah. They're tuning in. They love connecting with the guests that come on the show. So, thank you so much, Elle, for coming on. I really appreciate it. You guys, all the information will be online at shedidherwaypodcast.com for show on the show notes for this episode, and thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidherway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.